Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, a Bridgeport council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, outside of King of Prussia and Norristown, and which is all outside of the greater Philadelphia area. If you've listened to this podcast before, and hopefully you have, we have over 25 episodes already recorded. You can hear from people who have run for all sorts of offices, whether it's Congress or state legislature, prothonotary even, and judge. And today, finally, after 20-plus episodes, I'm talking to someone who's run for school board. This is something I think is very important, both as someone who cares about education and the fact that there are so many school board races across the country, and your input is vital because that's often where the tax base is. So I want to thank my friend Charles for introducing me to Nikki Vandermeulen. From Madison, Wisconsin. She's run for Madison School Board, and she has her own unique story. There is no one else like her in the country, as far as we know, who is in the position she's in, doing the things she's done, or has that story. So with all that introduction aside, please subscribe, share this podcast, this one in particular. Listen to the back episodes. I think you'll like all of them, because I know I did. But this one's going to be great. So Nikki, thank you for joining the You Should Run podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. This is great. As you stated, I am a unique individual. I am the first individual, as far as I've been told and as far as I've researched, to serve on a school board as an autistic adult. My autism plays a large role in my job, and it is the reason one of many reasons that I ran for school board.
I really appreciate you. I wanted you to be able to tell that story more than me. It's your story. I don't want to take it over.
And I appreciate that because there are so many people who talk for us, but not many who actually ask us. So it's kind of nice.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to do a lot of asking today, hopefully.
Cool.
And the first ask I'm going to have is, you're on school board now. I know you're going to talk about why you ran, but have you always been interested and motivated by education issues?
Yes, I've always have been. When I was 3 and a half, I got thrown out of preschool because I couldn't walk right due to my cerebral palsy and my autism because the ADA hadn't passed and didn't pass till I was 12 years old.
Wow.
At 7 years old, we filed a legal complaint because I was supposed to be in a school for disabled individuals only, a segregated learning environment. And so my mother had to file suit against her own school to be able to guarantee that I would be educated. And she was the guidance counselor at the elementary school at the time.
So she was suing her own employer.
Yes.
That's a really hard thing to do for anyone.
And if you don't, luckily, we could take that risk, but if you're a single parent, you can't risk your employment. And the privilege on that is unbelievable, and I'm thrilled she did it. But I'm sad that she had to do it.
Right.
But that started my interest. I decided at law at about 7 years old when my cousin graduated law school, and that I was really interested in education and the law and how we could be used to help other kids. Then I became a full-fledged advocate at about the age of 8. As you know, autistics rock back and forth. You've heard of that?
Yes, I've heard. And it's different for different people, right? It's not right. All like a universal.
Right. It is not universal, but some do. Mm-hmm. I'm a rocker. Well, I never thought I'd say it, but I am. Here's the thing. I had a student teacher who ordered the entire class to laugh at me for flipping my desk over when I did that.
Oh, my goodness.
I was 8.
I can't. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I can't imagine my kids being in that position or being in the position of treating others poorly.
I knew it wasn't right, Tony. So when I was told to write a thank you note to this student teacher, I refused to do it. My main teacher was nice enough to ask me why, and her words probably made me the advocate I am today.
Wow.
Because as she stated, you write a thank you note for someone who's done something nice for you. Clearly you have nothing to thank him for. The fact that someone was willing to listen to an 8-year-old made me realize how important education and teachers were and how we need to protect those who will listen to our kids.
Well, that's incredible, and I think from hearing you, it's why we have to instill these things early, because I mean, my kids, like I said, are 5 and 3, and the impact it had on you as a 8 and a 3-year-old is that you've become the advocate and person you are today. So
people think it's what you do in high school. No, it's what you do when you're young, even when you're really young, that can have even more of an impact.
So that you were 8, obviously you're not 8 anymore.
No.
And eventually you did run. So have you lived in Madison your whole life then?
I went to Whitewater High School. I lived in Whitewater for the first 18 years. I left Whitewater because there's no public transportation and I don't drive.
Mm-hmm.
And the courthouse was 35 miles away, so there's no way I could practice. So went to college and law school at the University of Wisconsin because I was told that I would never make it through college by the guidance counselor at the time. So I was told don't bother to ever attend, so I insisted on a Big Ten university. Got my law degree, applied for about 300 jobs. The minute they found out I was autistic, no one hired. So I hired myself, and I've been open for 11 years.
Wow. And so what year was this that no one would hire you?
2004.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things in the past 15 years, and it feels like 2004 was 2004 years ago. And it was 2004 when we were debating whether to ban gay people from getting married.
Exactly. Exactly, and people don't see that, that doesn't happen anymore. Unfortunately, in some places and in many places, it still does. But I finally got the school board bug and the education bug when I I decided in 2015 that I was going to run for school board. An individual was dragged out of East High School who had autism. She had a behavior intervention plan that allowed her to leave class. The principal did not follow. The principal at that time, not the current one, did not follow that plan and ordered the police to drag her out of the school and arrest her for trespassing.
Wow.
That could have been me. That could have been one of my clients because I do juvenile criminal law. And I went, this isn't right. Education is that important, and I kept seeing my autistic clients being punished for their autism in the education system, and I thought, I want to do better. So I started volunteering, try not to get too political, I started volunteering at the Hillary Clinton campaign. I got asked to volunteer because I asked a question that went viral and ended up in the New York Times that wasn't expected to go viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure most people don't expect to be viral until they are.
No. It was on how she would get rid of the sub-minimum wage or the pay of the disabled under $2 an hour, which is completely legal, unfortunately, under the Fair Wage Labor Act. Not knowing that she was the first political candidate to ever answer that question. And the Hillary campaign called me shortly after because she was the first candidate with an autism position and actually had what written out, which is how I really got involved, even more involved in politics. Week after the election, I had been mulling school board, as I said, for quite a while, and decided I was going to do it. That it was my time to run, that it was important to run, and talked to a friend of mine who worked on the campaign, my friend Jim White, and said, I'm running. And I made him my campaign manager, and the rest is kind of history.
So, I know in a lot of places, oddly enough, school board is often nonpartisan. Is that how it is there, where it's more like,
Says it is nonpartisan. Right. Legally, we are nonpartisan. In actuality, that's a really much of a gray area.
Right.
Madison is hyper-political of a city.
I've heard.
And therefore, our beliefs and values on everything tend to have a political bent. And our education system is no different. Our school board members are treated the same as mayors and aldermen because we run our race, and it involves the entire city. It doesn't involve a small territory. It involves the entire city of Madison because of an obscure state statute that requires it to be citywide.
Oh, that makes it a lot harder to run then.
Oh, yeah. And a lot more expensive, which is why fewer people do it.
And, you know, that, it's important for someone, it's important for anyone to run for an office like that to encourage other people to do it, because my experience, my purpose of doing this podcast is that people look at politics as being too hard, it's too time consuming, and, you know, we need these perspectives in office.
We need these perspectives in office, is right. And here's the thing, I want more women in politics. I want more individuals with disabilities in politics. When I first considered it, there were people who said, well, you belong behind the scenes. Autistics don't do that. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm doing that. And people need to know it's possible. The best compliment I ever got was a lawyer I'd never met in the courthouse who stated, he said, my campaign brochure to Concord, Massachusetts. The reason he sent it there was his niece was autistic and she needed to know that this was a career possibility.
Mm-hmm.
That will still be probably one of the best compliments I could ever receive.
It's, you know, I'm a straight white male of average to well means, like, I'm well represented. Not that I don't want to be in office, but, you know, we need some extra people in there.
We really do, and people tend to think school board, we don't do anything. Actually, we do quite a bit. My first year on the board, we had a public charter school that's part of our district, and it has since reformed and is doing wonderfully. But at that time, tried to ban the disabled. They literally sent a cease and desist letter to the board stating that individuals with disabilities were a burden to the educational system.
Wow. And this was in 2016 then?
Yes.
2017. I cannot imagine, as a parent now, I cannot imagine my kids growing up to be the kind of person that writes that letter.
We had a state senator last month who said that the special ed students were also a burden on, that disabled students were a burden on the education system and should be in separate schools.
So
he's in the state senate.
You are an expert in this law.
Yes.
Can you give me some stats on people with disabilities? Like how many people or, you know, things that strike out to you because you know better than I do.
I just read this today. There are 16% of individuals with autism in the nation that even have a job. Not the job they want, a job, period.
And how many people do you know how many people have autism?
One of every 66.
So that is a huge amount of people that are underemployed, and some people maybe for good, but for a lot for no good reason.
Correct. Other than fear, no one would hire me. When I got into politics, I had a supervisor who said I got my job by fraud because I didn't state my disability and took all my job responsibilities 3 days into the job.
And if you had said that you were disabled, people would say that you got your job because you said you were disabled.
Correct. So you can't win.
And that's just... I think that there are so many injustices that just sound absurd to people to the point where they assume that, well, that doesn't really happen because that's ridiculous. But obviously they do.
My disability counselor, DVR, Department of Vocational Rehabilitation, hired by the state, told me the best I could hope for with a law degree was to work for Goodwill for $2 an hour and I should be happy about
it. So let's say that that happened. Let's say that you got a law degree and you were the kind of person that said, well, that's all I can do. Clearly, you're smart enough to not do that because you have a law degree. But what would your life be like?
Very simply, you live at home or in a group home. You live with your parents. You're taken care of. You are seen as a perpetual child.
But you obviously don't live that life.
No. And my parents were very determined that I was not going to live that way. They made sure that independent living was stressed. That I knew how to handle things so that I could live on my own. And that is wonderful. But not everyone has those services. We don't teach them at the schools anymore. We don't teach basic living. How many kids know how to write a check or do their laundry before they graduate if they haven't been taught at home? We don't always teach them, and they sound basic skills. But for individuals with disabilities, they're not always basic.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of kids, their parents are too busy to teach them. They might be good parents, but...
You gotta understand, when the minimum wage, which in Wisconsin is $7.25 an hour, you gotta work at least two full-time jobs at minimum wage to be able to afford rent in the city. So, how are you going to have time to teach anyone anything?
Right.
You can't possibly.
I think people don't realize that time is money, money is time. That time is the thing that you can't get back. You can always get more money. Not easily, but you can get more money. You can never get more time.
Exactly, and people just don't seem to grasp that. And that translates into a worse quality of life. These political situations are terrifying. The talk of the bank refusing Medicare expansion, the talk of arresting individuals and rejecting them on immigration. We worry because what is the disabled going to be next?
Well, and a lot of those people are disabled, like the immigrant population, yep. A lot of them. Oh, man. So,
we're a target. Let's be 100% honest. I am a 40-year-old Jewish disabled female. I might as well just put a target on my head.
Right, and I think it's easy for people to be on the menu. You know that old phrase, you're either at the table or on the menu. But it's easy to be when people don't see you as a full human being.
And that's the thing. I had to prove that I was a human being. And that's the other reason I ran. I wanted people to realize that we are human. It was nice that people advocated for us, and it was wonderful, and we are grateful. But it's our time to advocate for ourselves. And we deserve a voice, and we deserve a place at that table. And sometimes you just have to take it.
So, you as a person with a disability, and I even don't want to say a disability, because clearly you are fully able. But what were the biggest challenges for running for school board? Because, I mean, did you have, like, the party just doing everything for you? Obviously, you had to do a lot of work.
What it was, I had a four-person team.
Mm-hmm.
Zeb, Philip, my campaign manager, Jim, and Ryan, who was my social media director. There were four of us. Slogan, do not kill the candidate. Related to the fact that I was running in a primary and it was covered with ice in February. And I have no balance on ice. So the biggest challenge actually was to try and get door to door when you physically can't get up the flight of stairs without help.
Yeah.
Because not all the ice is shoveled. So literally, I had to hold on to someone to get to the door. You do the talking just fine. I just couldn't get there.
Right.
And I was told, school board, you don't do doors. You just mail things.
Really?
Well, to do that is rather ridiculous, considering mailing the entire city of Madison costs $25,000. I don't have $25,000. Thank you.
I can't imagine telling any candidate, even for Senate, like, I know that, you know, if you're running for governor or Senate, you have to raise a ton of money, but that voter contact is the most important thing.
That's my opinion, always has been, always will be. The person I ran against had never had an opponent in 9.5 years.
So you ran against one person, or was it the top vote getters? How did that work?
Okay, I had a primary.
Right.
So I had two. Then I won. Then I got second in the primary, and after getting second in the primary, partway through, my opponent dropped out due to a family health issue. His wife, unfortunately, was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh, geez.
And but his name remained on the ballot, so there are people who could vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So the race didn't end. So I still had to earn it. I ended up getting 29,000 votes.
That I did. Now, when you had decided to run, did you expect that? Were you blown away by people coming out to support you?
Yeah. Actually, yes, I was. I mean, like, blown away completely. Because I wasn't sure anyone would. I didn't know if anyone would show up. My own parents can't vote for me because they missed, because they're out of district by one block. Madison City,
yeah.
Middleton School District. So they can't even vote for me. I'm like, am I going to be the only vote I get? Ended up, no, actually. People, the message resonated. I think it's because I'm pretty honest. I'll tell you what I can and can't do. I'll tell you what needs to change, and I'm not willing to compromise values to do that.
So, you had to get to it. So I think that is something that we should keep in mind, is that the challenges for someone like me to run for office are, it's can be inconvenient timing to knock on doors. The challenge for a person with disabilities to run for office is actually getting to the physical door.
Yeah. And I'm not in a wheelchair. For those who are in a wheelchair, do you know how much that is inaccessible? How many buildings you can't get to?
Oh, yeah, all of them. Like, it's like, if you went to my neighborhood, my mom has MS. I feel terrible. It's hard for her to get into our house. She's not in a wheelchair, but
yeah,
that's, you know, that shows you don't have to be in a wheelchair to not be able to easily access something.
Oh, no. I had cataract surgery. I had massive cataracts, so I was legally blind for 6 months this year. Lovely additional saga there. But not being able to see it gave you a whole new measure of obstacles that you don't realize that exist. Not saying there are stairs there.
Right.
That tends to be an issue.
So, speaking of things that you didn't realize would exist, once you got into the process of both running for school board and being on school board, what were some of the policy things that you maybe were surprised to deal with? And also, what's the budget you have to do? Because that's a massive budget, right?
$418 million.
That is a significant chunk of change.
Yeah. We're the second largest district in the state.
Mm-hmm.
That's a large, large amount of money. That's more money than I'm ever going to see, thank you very much.
Probably. You never know.
But yet, we still have issues with people not getting the services they need because we haven't had a special ed increase for 10 years. Now we have a governor who wants to, and we have a Republican legislature who cut $900 million out of it and said, see, we do good things for education and the disabled. No, no, you don't.
So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but from being in politics, I feel like a lot of people see big numbers, and it's hard to fathom what that means to an average voter. Like, people are smart. I'm not trying to discount voters or citizens. No, but they think, oh, you have $400+ million, almost $500 million. Then you have the money to do everything. But $500 million can be stretched pretty thin in a school district, right?
We have 50 schools.
Right, 50
and
schools.
27,000 students.
Right.
That doesn't go as far as you think.
Right.
And you have to understand, under federal law, under IDEA, which was a law in 1973 when it was passed, it states you cannot cut special education. So you have to take it from the general fund, which means your football team, if you can't afford to pay the bills, goes bye-bye.
I'm sure that's popular.
Yeah, they don't like that. So we have to do what we can, but we have high-needs kids who aren't getting the services because we can't afford to provide them.
So what can you do as a policymaker to... obviously, you can't just snap your fingers.
What I do is very simply focus on the teachers. We have to pay a living wage so that they realize they are respected, because I can't change the budget on those things, but I can make sure that they are paid what they are worth so that the system keeps running. I can petition the legislature at the same time, but I still have to take care of my own and do it that way. So many people want to go program after program after program. No, I need to go back to the basics. I have to pay my teachers. I have to make sure that my staff is paid, that my substitute teachers get paid if there's 4 days of snow in a row, and make sure that subs are included without having to ask multiple times as a board member, are these people included? Those are all important things. But people tend to see only the big picture and say, oh, they only work, the teachers and staff only work 9 months of the year. Here's one problem that people don't think about. They also don't get paid for three.
Right, yeah, my mom is a teacher. My aunt's a teacher. And I know that, you know, people just don't... so many people don't get teaching. But I assume that your advocacy for teachers goes back to your first story of being 8 years old and a teacher listening.
It's what shaped me. It really did, and it made me think, she actually was in my corner. To have someone outside of your parents who you know and trust enough to have your back and to truly protect you is priceless for a child. You can't replicate that. We're seeing a lot of mental health and other stresses in schools because teachers aren't given time to teach. They're trying to be social workers, parents, teachers, doctors, everything at once. We're not equipped to handle all of that, which is why we need the funding help from our state, and we don't always get it. And I can't always change that, but what I can do is fight for the programs that work. Fight for the teachers who work with those kids. I went to all 50 schools this year. I made sure to go to all 50. We're assigned 8. I decided to be ambitious. And very simply, because I need to see what a 0.5 increase is in a person. How do you have half a person? We do things at 2.5 or 2.0. What's half a person? I gotta see where the money goes. And what I saw was very clear. Our teachers are not getting the support they need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really sad. So that just means I gotta do my job harder.
Well, I appreciate doing that. And I think that shows the value of, you know, if you're treating people well, as that teacher did, the person you're treating well 10, 20, 30, 40 years later can go on to pass that on, can pass on that karma in a lot, in some big ways like you're doing now.
Mrs. Lundin, and I do use names because that was a major thing in my life, made a major impact. But how many teachers are never told they had an impact on someone's life, or that they're the reason that they did what they did? I knew from that point on I was going to be an advocate. There were no questions from that point on. That was what I was supposed to do, because someone did it for me and made it better for me. So now it's my job to make it better for them.
So, I really appreciate that. One thing going back, though, we talked about wanting different perspectives in office. I know the issue. So we talked about why you ran, the challenges of running, and the unique challenges for you, the issues you're working on now. What can we do to improve the situation where more people with disabilities can run for office and be represented?
We need to do mentoring programs for individuals with disabilities to show that it's possible.
Great answer.
Teach them how to fundraise. Teach them how to contact people. Make sure that they understand the process isn't that scary. We have to have people with disabilities also in there to give back and say, I did this, this is how I did it, now let me help you. There are two ways in society you can do things. You can either break the glass ceiling and repair it, or you can break the glass ceiling and put out a ladder and help the next person up. Our job is to put that ladder down.
Yeah, I did a podcast recently with Emily Segrist, ran for legislature in Wisconsin. Got a lot of Wisconsin on this podcast, which is good. But
yes, you do.
And I don't mind that. I appreciate Charles connecting us. But yeah, she talked about the training she went to when I first got into politics. I went to a number of trainings, and I don't know that there are really any training.
There is one that is starting, a disability training that is starting up, and it isn't fully formed yet, but it's called this. I have to get the exact name, and I do not have it, but I can send it to you.
Yeah, please do, and if you can get it up in the next couple of days, I'll put it up when I put the link up.
I would love to, because we're out there, and we are the largest minority in the United States, yet we are voting percentage of like 1.8.
Oh, I mean, I'm in Pennsylvania. I think there is one legislator out of our 253 total that's in a wheelchair. And as a result, this might shock you, but the state capitol in Harrisburg is not exactly easily accessible by wheelchair.
And our courthouse isn't either.
Right.
So, and we have a individual who's wonderful, who's interning at the courthouse, who got stuck in between the two doors because the timer locked her out. So she was stuck in the corridor until we could get her out.
Right.
That shouldn't have happened in 2019.
Right. And it's a huge issue. And if people, I don't know what the squeamishness is about it, that people don't want to address it. But everyone is impacted by someone with a disability. Everybody.
Absolutely, and when we do well, everyone does well. I take curb cuts, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They were created for wheelchairs. Guess what? They're helpful for new mothers with strollers. They're helpful for rollerbladers. They're helpful for skateboarders. They're helpful for walkers.
Right.
That accommodation may have been made for the disabled, but frankly, it's useful for everyone.
Yep. So, finally, Nikki, I like to end this podcast. You would encourage more people to run for office. Why should more people run for office, particularly people with any kind of disability?
The reason why we need you out there to run for office is this. We have a slogan of the disability community, nothing about us without us. Very simply, if we want to be truly represented in government, if we want to truly have our needs met and our voices heard, we need to be in all levels of government. To be respected, to be understood. Best way you do it is you go local. And people always think the local offices, oh, they're not glamorous. They're the closest thing with the tax base and where you have the most impact, not the least.
And if you're in those local offices, yeah, you're right. You make the most immediate impact. And it's easier for people to see someone with a disability in office there and feel comfortable or feel better about voting for them for state legislature than voting for them for Congress, voting for them for governor. If you can see them as your school board member, you can see them as anything.
Absolutely. We just need to get in the door.
Great. Well, if you're listening, I hope you're going to get in the door yourself. I hope that you will be inspired by Nikki's story and help other people open that door, throw down that ladder, and let's make it easier for more people to run for office.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you, Nikki. I really appreciate your story. And please, if you're listening, I hope you're motivated today. Nikki, congratulations on all you're doing, and I look forward to your success.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later.